Listening to, dude.
Yeah, Sean, what are you rocking out to in here?
You guys didn't watch late 80s primetime sitcoms?
Nope.
Not
wasn't
so much.
Alive.
Okay, well, you missed a golden era of television, first of all. Second of all, that was the song Doing It the Best I Can by Bill Medley, which is a good name for a musician. And it was for the show Just the 10 of Us, a sitcom on ABC that aired in 1988. So Just the 10 of Us, talking about the Democratic State Convention, it's pretty obvious.
What's obvious?
Well, we're talking about all the candidates.
Wait. I thought there were 9 candidates for governor.
No, there's 10 now. 9 was not enough, and now there are 10.
Okay, well, let's talk about all 10 of them. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, we're doing it the best we can, talking about the Democratic State Convention and 10 candidates for governor. Well, what better way to get into these 10 candidates and re-examine them than to peel into their inner psyches and evaluate them based on their walk-on music?
Obviously an important element of any campaign.
What a lot of thought goes into these walk-on songs, I am positive.
Literally hundreds of people were in that room when that music played for 5 or 10 seconds. It could make or break these campaigns.
So real quick, just to set the stage, this was Friday. In Oshkosh, the Democratic candidates for governor each get 5 minutes, and they get to walk on the stage, and their campaigns get to choose the songs that they walk on to. According to the party, the order they spoke was chosen at random.
All right, here is Kelda Roy's. And that was Katy Perry's Roar from 2013, a song I'm well familiar with because my daughters love it. Next.
All right, so this is Tony Evers. And that was, of course, Alice Cooper's School's Out, the 1972 hit.
Oh, you mean because Tony Evers is the superintendent of the State Department of Public Instruction?
Yeah, see the schools thing? You get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
And if y'all think he's too polite, look, he rocks out to Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Malin Mitchell, Firefighters Union head, Madison firefighter. That's some song they tell me is by Led Zeppelin.
A lot of people go through a Led Zeppelin phase.
Wait,
in
that
their
song
life.
Is called Immigrant Song?
Yes.
Do you think there's some hidden messaging there?
I think the messaging, if there is any, is come from the land of the ice and snow. It's like Wisconsin, man. I don't know.
I get it.
Maybe he just likes to get the lead out every so often.
All right. So the next person is, this is Andy Gronick's walk-on song. Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here. Let's get it started. All right. Of course, if you were living under a rock in the year 2004, you might not know that is the Black Eyed Peas song, Get It Started.
I'm sorry. Nothing against Andy Gronick here, but I hate the Black Eyed Peas. Laurel loves them. They're her favorite band, but they are the worst.
All right. So let's just move on.
So here's why we have 10 candidates to talk about. This is Josh Paid, who filed his nomination signatures ahead of the deadline, assuming they hold up. And he played the Game of Thrones theme. Game of Thrones, because coming this fall, they're going to defeat a walker.
Mm-hmm.
You get it?
Yeah.
All right. Next.
Kathleen Vinehout, Senator from Alma. And that, of course, is the Pat Benatar classic from 1988, All Fired Up, which we had to Shazam.
We needed it twice.
It's a deeper cut from Pat Benatar.
Yeah, it is.
So next we have Paul Soglin, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. You know you're love. Keep on right, so that was the classic from 1967, artist Jackie Wilson, Your Love Keeps Lifting Me, in parentheses, Higher and Higher.
And there are different versions of that song. We decided this is the one because we couldn't tell for sure. Next candidate, Mike McCabe. What if I'm far from home? Oh, brother, I will hear you call. And that was Hey Brother by Avicii. Mike McCabe, the only Democratic gubernatorial candidate to use a country song for his walk-up music. And yet...
it was by a Swedish DJ.
It was a little tricky.
Country song with a twist.
Yeah, we Shazammed that one and we thought, no, that's not what
it
we're
can't
looking
be Avicii.
For. No,
yeah.
But it was.
Is it my turn?
Mm-hmm. Your turn.
All right, so here's one we did not have to Shazam. This is Matt Flynn's walk-up song. Wow! I feel good. Of course, that was James Brown's timeless classic from 1964, I Feel Good.
All right, and last to go in the speeches over the weekend, Dana Walks. Can't stop me now. I'm just getting started. And that was Michelle Malone, Just Getting Started.
All right, so let's get down to like the nitty gritty, the actual stuff of the convention.
Now that you've made it through that musical train wreck, let's actually talk about something of substance.
Okay, I've never covered a convention where there were 10 candidates speaking for one office. I mean, I've covered, you know, sometimes for like treasurer or lieutenant governor or some of these lesser known races, you'll have like 4 or 5 candidates. And it's kind of interesting to watch because it's a real horse race. You don't know much about them. The office isn't of much consequence, but it's fun to see that many people get up there and try to differentiate themselves. So 10 candidates was a total new experience for everybody in that room. Nobody's seen that many candidates get up and speak before. And the first thing I will tell you about the way they did it, Democrats, is they had 5 minutes apiece for these candidates. Mm-hmm. And when they said that, I thought, okay, Democrats, your conventions always go long. You go way past schedule. The candidates, the speakers go on forever. But what they did is they cut mics at 5 minutes sharp. And I'm told that they were like on a timer and it was the AV people who were controlling it. And so it was basically going to happen no matter what. So there were some awkward endings to speeches, guys, where people didn't quite have the time to get through their remarks. I got you hooked there with the time limits. First
you
guys,
did.
They were timed speeches.
Wait, so who got cut off?
Well, Paul Soglin got cut off for sure. You know, Tony Evers probably had a few more things he would have said, but he kind of exited gracefully as they were fading his mic down.
Oh, so they kind of faded it, right?
There was a slight fade before he got cut.
Okay.
Andy Gronick got cut, and he decided he was going to try to, you know, power through it.
Oh.
And so he, you know, set the mic down and he stood up in front of the lectern and he was going to have a moment where he's just shouting to this big crowd of about 1,000 people and kind of thought for a second there, oh, this is going to be interesting. But then they cut him off with the intro music for the next candidate.
Oh, wow.
That's who was the next candidate?
It was McKay, or no, it was Josh Paid.
Yeah.
So they brought on Game of Thrones.
They did.
Wow. That's harsh. That's interesting that they had to have, clearly they had like a multi-pronged strategy for having people stick to 5 minutes. I mean, and you would kind of have to for a field that big. They needed to have structure or, you know, you guys were going to be there all night.
They had to keep it interesting. And they felt like short speeches that way.
Yeah,
but when you think about it,
quickly.
That's 50 minutes worth of speaking.
Uh-huh.
So, did they keep it interesting?
It was interesting just to see how everybody handled it. You know, how do you handle this pressure cooker environment where you've got to differentiate yourself, you know, in that short amount of time in front of this group of people, knowing that in a race like this, little moments could make the difference.
So two questions. One, what were some of the strategies that people used to differentiate themselves? And two, how did the audience react to these different speeches?
So I think the reactions that you hear during these speeches are from the candidate's supporters mm-hmm. in a lot of cases. You know, there are vocal supporters for these candidates out in the crowd. Sometimes they'll be out there and you'll see campaigns passing out campaign signs to wave during their speeches like, oh, yeah, your guy's going to come next. That's why you're doing that. I see. You did hear like Kelda Royce came out and right away told the story about her 3-year-old daughter having to go through a school safety drill at school. So Kelda Royce, who has kind of made a name for herself in this campaign by running as the mom, was true to form right from the get-go. And mm-hmm. I think she had people listening mm-hmm. because of that, just bringing out that personal story.
School safety drill as in like active shooter like drill?
An active shooter drill where her daughter has to go like hide under a table or something. And they don't tell her why. But
did anybody else do kind of that like personal appeal, like a personal story kind of thing to kick off their speech?
Yeah. I mean, in differing degrees. There wasn't not so much about like family mm-hmm. the way that Kelda Royce did. I'll tell you another one was Tony Evers. He's the second speaker, so we'll just go to him real quick. The knock on Tony Evers is that he's basically too polite or not fiery enough to be the Democratic nominee. He's got all this name recognition and he's state superintendent and he says he can beat Walker, but Tony Evers is kind of not a fiery speaker. So Tony Evers, one, starts out with Alice Cooper, which rocks. And then, two, he curses to make his point there again.
Not only curses, but takes the Lord's name in vain, yeah. which was subsequently mentioned by Scott Walker.
Right. And so Tony Evers has done this before in recent speeches where he used a different word to make his point. He did it again here. So he's looking to mm-hmm. get your attention. He definitely got my attention, you know, because you don't hear that at conventions.
We've mentioned this kind of language in the podcast before, and I can't remember what.
You mean cowboy language?
Cowboy language. Yeah. Yes. So Tony Evers is using some cowboy
That's
language.
Right. Cowboy language from Tony Evers. And I wonder if. I don't wonder. This was by design from Tony Evers to get attention, but I wonder if they like even thought about what word they're going to use because Governor Walker kind of called him out on that for cursing at convention. And really it helps Tony Evers when Governor Walker criticizes him, arguably. It's like, hey, look, the governor's afraid of me mm-hmm. or you wouldn't be criticizing me if he thought I was a safe candidate.
It separates him from the pack in a way. Yeah.
And to just return to the thing about the personal anecdote, after talking about how much of a bad dude Tony Evers was acting like on stage, what personal anecdote did he talk about?
Oh, he beat cancer was his personal anecdote, which he doesn't talk about a whole lot. But they're at the point in this campaign where these candidates are going to really have to put themselves out there. I think if they want to try to emerge in this field, or in Evers' case, if he wants to hang on to whatever lead he has, he's going to have to be out there. Like, here's who I am. Beating cancer is something that people can relate to. And so he talked about it.
So Tony Evers is trying to take, you know, more of a fiery line than we might be used to. But you were saying that he definitely by far was not the fieriest of the fiery men and women up there.
Well, in terms of his delivery, no, it was consistent with who he is in all of his speeches. You know, it's the Tony Evers approach. And he said, like, I am who I am. I'm not going to change.
I am who I am.
He does it. It's really weird when he does it in that Popeye voice, too. And he blows his like corn cob pipe and eats some spinach. That was a very strange aside. Okay, the candidate who seemed suited for a speech in front of a room of people was Mike McCabe, who, man, he got going. And McCabe is intense when he speaks in these situations. And I think because of the time limits, it just got more intense. Like you're thinking like, wow, you're speaking really fast and really, really demonstrative here, Mike McCabe. And then he would just get a little bit more, like he turned it up to 11 in the intensity.
I'm picturing those like high school debate kids who have to talk really, really, really fast.
No, it was, I like the way that Dan Bice put it, the columnist reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. when he referred to McCabe, he did parentheses D dash Fighting Bob because it was very much that like Fighting Bob-esque, you know, gotta take down like the big money special interests. It's a cancer on democracy. We gotta uproot it. We'll never get anything we want until we take care of this. It was peak McCabe, I'd say.
That is so interesting. Stay tuned to WPR this week because my feature on Mike McCabe features a comparison of him to Fightin' Bob.
There you go.
Some people have talked about that.
Yeah. So this thing is just turning into a...
one big promo
for
our features.
We're pimping out the podcast to talk about your features.
Check out my new single that I'm going to drop with.
So my guess is probably big money out of politics is one of them. But what were some of the big themes? What were the big Democratic themes that you felt like rose to the top here?
And among the 10 Democratic candidates for governor?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Foxconn would be probably one of them. You know, there is a certain amount of just saying we're going to undo Governor Walker's agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things was Foxconn and contrasting Foxconn with, you know, what the state has done for other priorities. So Kathleen Vinehout started it right off with a story about Foxconn and actually took a little ways to get there for the story to develop. But she was talking about Foxconn. If you laid down the Foxconn incentive package in $100 bills, it would stretch across the country to California. And then she contrasted that to like...
See, I thought you were going to go that like she's like, well, in 1982, a Taiwanese man named Terry Goh used his engineering degree.
She's not going to use her 5-minute speech to tell the history of Foxconn. She was talking about how the state's priorities are more for corporations and not people.
So like aside from the actual talking that all of the candidates got to do up on stage, what were they doing the rest of the time? Like what else was going on? Were there like booths that they had set up and they could mingle and hang out and talk and whatever?
Everybody has a table where they can personally kind of station themselves and talk to people. It's a good idea for them to do that. Or they can have representatives of their campaign there to hand out campaign literature or talk about who this candidate is. Pate is that like he was like the first one when you walked in the door at this convention center. There he was often just saying hello to people. Other tables, for example, Andy Gronick had a table and he was there a lot, just stopping, shaking hands. And it's good to have a gimmick at a convention to make your table stand out. So Andy Gronick's gimmick was he has these fake money. This is like Scott Walker Foxconn money.
They were like special interest dollars, right? And they had Scott Walker's face on them.
Yeah, I snapped a picture of this, so let me describe it. What it says: special interest money, not legal tender. There was a bunch of that you could pick up if you wanted to add it to your collection of not money. And
it's not like they were actually coupons for something you could redeem at another table.
No,
like use this fake money that's a political statement to get a dollar off your Starbucks Frappuccino at the convention center lobby.
No, that'd been a great idea. Yeah.
I was going to say Orange Julius, but then I realized that those haven't been around for years and it's just making me sad because I want one.
Yeah, as far as I know, there was just the hotel head coffee and they were running kind of low. Mike McCabe, he of Blue Jean Nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that. That's kind of his thing. What do you think his tablecloth was? Well, you already know because I told you, unfortunately. His tablecloth was made of denim. I think it was sewn together from, you know, denim fabric. And
you think he just goes to like St. Vinny's or Goodwill and buys up a whole bunch of jeans and then has like a seamstress on his campaign staff?
What if he's authentic and it's like only jeans worn personally by Mike McCabe will be a part of the campaign? But Mike McCabe had a table covered with denim and, you know, his literature was in they're like makeshift pockets. They're like rolled up pants legs that he was using to hold his campaign literature at the table.
It's like so, very crafty.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so we got the songs, we got the merch, we got kind of the general vibe, the personal stories. The other highlight, I think, arguably, at this convention was the straw poll that's run every year at this convention by WisPolitics.
Right, and we should contrast this to what they do in the Republican Party first. So, explain to people what they do in the Republican Party when it comes to voting for candidates at conventions, and then I'll tell you what they did here.
Yeah. So at the Republican convention, I talked a little bit about this in the podcast that we did about that convention a couple weeks ago, I think it was. What they do there is something that you're probably more familiar with from watching big conventions on TV. They have like the delegates that are standing and they've got the signs, but instead of states that you've seen at maybe the national convention, they have the county names. And they all cast ballots voting for who the party is going to endorse in the particular race that they're voting about. But the Democrats, the state party doesn't endorse a candidate. So what do they do instead, Sean?
Yeah, so they don't do anything. WisPolitics sets up a table at convention and has a straw poll. And anybody who shows up at convention can vote in that straw poll. If you're a candidate, you can vote for yourself. You work for a campaign, you can vote for yourself. If you're a guest of the campaign and you're at convention, you can vote. It's basically taking the temperature of this. In this case, it was about 800 people in the room, you know, for this convention on Friday and Saturday.
So you can vote on either day. Mm-hmm. Now, is this just kind of on the honor system and that like somebody could theoretically vote twice, right?
No, I mean, like everybody gets one vote. I'm not sure how mechanically WisPolitics does it, but
how are they ensuring their electoral security?
You just kind of have to trust WisPolitics, I think, and they've never given anybody reason not to. And because of all the interest in this primary, the editor, WisPolitics, J.R. Ross, tweeted that this was like the largest number of votes he's ever had at a convention. And you know, he pointed to that multi-candidate primary as the reason why. So 789 people voted. Mm-hmm. What did they say? And we preface this again. This is not a scientific poll, okay? It is.
And this is a very specific group of people, too.
Yes.
Not only is it not a scientific poll, but this is sort of like the base of the base. These are the people that come to a state party convention.
That said, Kelda Royce won the straw poll. She had 184 of those 789 votes. That's about 23%. Followed by Malin Mitchell with 93, Tony Evers with 91.
So they basically combined got the same amount that she did.
Yeah, that's right. So a convincing, as straw polls go, it was a convincing win for Kelda Royce. In a 10-candidate primary, when somebody emerges with that percentage, that's something she's going to use, especially given the limited public polling in this race.
All right, so read the rest of the list now.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to go through them all. Fourth place, Andy Gronick, 89, tied with Dana Walks at fourth place, who also had 89. They're probably thinking like, man, if I'd have gotten one more. Did you vote? Kathleen Vinehout had 83 votes for fifth place. Sixth place, Mike McCabe. McDenim Rebel is his Twitter handle. I had to think about who is that? Denim. Mike McCabe, 81 votes. Seventh place, Matt Flynn, 71 votes. Eighth place, Josh Paid, 7 votes. Ninth place, Paul Soglin, 1 vote. And that is what I may remember from this convention, honestly. I think if they did a public poll right now, like if Marquette released a poll today, do I think that Paul Soglin would be in last place and would get one person saying that they would vote for him in a Democratic primary? I don't think that. But for Soglin to come to convention and only get one that is kind of remarkable, because he has a 50-year political career. He has, you know, he won his mayoral race very handily last time around. He has a solid base of support in one of the state's largest Democratic cities, but he has in this race taken a campaign strategy that is kind of different. I mean, what have we read about?
So he's running a campaign that he's calling the Supper Club campaign, right?
Yeah, this was an isthmus, so I think, that it was kind of, they did the big story on his campaign strategy.
Yeah, and he says that he's not going to go out and be sort of aggressive and bother people. He's going to, on the way to campaign stops, campaign events, stop at supper clubs, and just kind of hang out and let people come to him.
And by hang out, the Isthmus cover image was Paul Soglin resting in a hammock, or as Wisconsinites say it, a hammock for some reason. But anyway, continue. I just wanted to get that dig in at Wisconsin pronunciations.
That's all. I thought you were going to talk about the rest of the art where they had a picture of him with like Drapes magazine or something in front of the executive.
I don't remember. I just remember the hammock.
Oh, okay. Well, that was sort of the interesting part. He's in front of the executive residence and he's taking a nap with Drapes magazine resting on his chest. Like he's measuring the drapes.
So that's Paul Soglin's campaign, and maybe some Democrats have been frustrated by that sort of casual strategy on his part, and that was reflected a little bit in the straw poll, maybe, possibly.
And I mean, Sean, I think you said too that while the straw polling was going on, you know, other candidates were out and mingling and like, you know, asking for people's votes for this straw poll. And
like very, very pushy, I'd say. Not like casual, hey, you know, you vote. No big deal. It's okay. It's like, hey, would you go vote for me? You know, really, I can push you over there. I can carry you in this wagon to the straw poll place.
But Paul Soglin and his campaign manager were there Friday when he spoke, but they weren't around Saturday at all, right? As far as you saw?
That's right. And I mean, Soglin, he's not out there in a pushy way going around introducing himself to people. It seemed like if people came up and wanted to talk, he'd talk. But he seemed at that convention true to his word on his strategy.
Well, that was a lot of stuff, but we got through it the best we could. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
Of the game. If I can stay on the ball, take it minute by minute, I just might make the Hall of Fame. What can I say? I'm doing it the best I can.
If you're listening to this episode right now, there's a pretty good chance that you are already doing it the best you can. But if you want to do just a little bit more, why not subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast on iTunes? It's also available on Google Play and many other podcast apps. And if you want to catch up on all of our past episodes, you can do it anytime you like at wpr.org/politics. Yeah.